Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
2, 3, 4. This is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's your host, Will Doctor.
Nice to have you aboard. I'm Will Doctor, bringing you the latest on the world of golf. Happy New Year to all. Coming off a thrilling week in the world of sports as far as the college football playoffs, which is where we'll start. We'll do a little NFL. We'll get to the golf a little bit later on and get to some topics on the 2026 season and TGL. Thursday's New Year Day slate was one for the books. Not with how it started at the Orange Bowl with Oregon absolutely embarrassing Texas Tech in a 23-0 blowout. The Ducks defense put on an all-time performance led by Brandon Finley Jr., who had 2 picks and a fumble recovery in a shutout. I mean, Tech fans have to be absolutely sick after watching senior quarterback Baron Morton in tears on the sideline after the game. That game, the Orange Bowl, all in all, besides watching the Ducks defense go to work, that game was an absolute snoozer as we were getting warmed up for the Thursday quarterfinals. The second game on Thursday in the Rose Bowl between Indiana and Alabama was another blowout as the Hoosiers won 38-3. This was a much more entertaining game, in my opinion, being that Indiana is really electric on both sides of the ball with Heisman-winning quarterback Fernando Mendoza throwing for 3 touchdowns and the defense of Brian Haynes that has just been completely dialed in. And I think it's really impossible not to get behind Kurt Seghetti and the buttoned-up organization and operation he's running there in Indiana. I am so fired up for their matchup against Oregon on Friday. And here was Mendoza post-game with ESPN after finding out who the Hoosiers will face in the Peach Bowl.
Already beaten this season.
Wow, that's like the first time I actually heard that Oregon won. It just got locked into the game. However, Oregon, fantastic Big Ten opponent. We went over there, and it's really hard to beat a team twice. Oregon, Dante Moore, you know, Dan Lanning, and their defensive coordinator, Lou Poy, new head coach, Akami. Those guys are legit. And so I think it's going to be a great matchup. Can't wait to play some good football against that. I think it's going to be a great matchup. All respect to them. I mean, I got to get the game plan. I got to get to watch the film now. They're a tough opponent.
I'm going to give you a few minutes to go enjoy this one.
Yeah, you can color me obsessed with Mendoza and the energy he brings to the table. Indiana opens as the 4-point favorite, and I have no idea how Oregon intends on stopping the Hoosier pass rush. I think it's going to be a long night in Atlanta for Dante Moore. Even more so than when the Hoosiers defense picked him off twice back in early October when Indiana beat Oregon the first time around. And then that third game on New Year's Day, you had Ole Miss. It was the last of the New Year's 6 bowl games. You had Ole Miss upset Georgia in what was a thriller that came down to a 47-yard field goal from Lucas Carnero, plus a safety there at the very end to make it a 39-34 final as Salt and Pepper Pete Golding gets his second straight postseason win after Lane Kiffin's departure to LSU. What a performance from Trinidad Shambliss. What a performance from Kewon Lacy. I am totally jacked up for the Fiesta Bowl where Ole Miss will try to avoid a whooping from Michael Irvin and the Miami Hurricanes, who are a 3.5-point favorite and feeling themselves coming off commanding victories over two absolutely disgraceful efforts from Texas A&M and Texas Tech. I have no idea who to pick between Miami and Ole Miss Thursday night in Glendale, Arizona. We've got superstar producer Ryan Morrow on the ones and twos. Miami, Ole Miss, any thoughts there, Ryan?
I tend to lean more towards the SEC. I have a little bit of SEC bias. Even still, I want to recognize Miami has a great defense. They've been performing probably the best out of any defense in the playoffs currently. My only worry about them is their offense. I'm not a huge fan of Carson Beck. I don't think that they provide the opportunity to get a lot of points. And going against a team like Ole Miss, who tends to score quite a bit. I mean, you saw their game against Georgia. Putting up 39 against that defense is always a feat in itself. So I'd have to lead towards Ole Miss.
I like that. I like that, Ryan. We're gonna have to get midday host superstar Miami Hurricane Sharp Del Olale. We'll have to see what his thoughts are as far as Miami. We'll get Timmy Time's thoughts on Ole Miss later on. Ryan, you know, another one for you. You know, we talked about this pre-show as far as the Indiana versus Oregon Peach Bowl. Your thoughts on Dante Moore? I am not a big believer. Is there anything that maybe I'm unaware of when it comes to the talent of Dante Moore and what he could do against Indiana?
Given Oregon's history with quarterbacks and their tendency to play with a more West Coast style of dump off or touchdown, you know, I think that he's done a pretty good job this season of just playing in rhythm and playing the system that Oregon likes to play. Obviously, they've gotten into the playoffs, so
yeah.
Credit to them. I would not put any money on Oregon, that being said, to win this game.
No, I agree with you there. I am fearful of the Indiana pass rush for the Oregon football organization. Two absolutely phenomenal semifinals ahead. You know, yesterday's slate of bowl games were okay. Texas State, they were a 19.5-point favorite over Rice. You know, I thought that was free money to start the day there in Fort Worth, as Rice had no business in any bowl game. I mean, 5-7? 5-7 getting to a bowl game. You know, Mississippi State was in the same situation going up against Wake Forest. Owls got absolutely smoked 41-10 with Texas State quarterback Brad Jackson, who I'm a fan of. I think this guy has some serious potential, Ryan. He threw three touchdowns yesterday, smoking out Rice before Navy handled Cincinnati, which was no surprise after Brandon Sorsby hit the transfer portal before the Liberty Bowl. Wake Forest, as aforementioned, handled the 5-7 Mississippi State team at the Mayo Bowl. And then SMU beat a 17-ranked Arizona 24-19. You have one absolutely phenomenal NFL slate today with Panthers-Bucks at 3:30. Playing for the NFC South title, as the Panthers have the opportunity to win their first division title since 2015, with really no better time than the present, being that the Bucs, you know, they're leaking oil, coming off four losses in a row, even though they are the 3-point Vegas favorite there at home. And then at 7 p.m., the San Francisco 49ers host the Seattle Seahawks. In a game with major implications as far as the NFC South is concerned. Both of these teams are playing for a chance to not have to leave home for the entire playoffs if they can put together a run. But specifically the Niners, being that the Super Bowl is hosted in San Fran this year at Levi Stadium. So the Niners, if they can make it all the way to the Super Bowl, would potentially not have to leave home for the entire playoffs, including the championship game, which would be a first. The Bucks did win the Super Bowl at Raymond James in 2020, but they were a 5 seed that had to go on the road in the playoffs, and that was the same situation with the Rams in 21 when they won the Super Bowl at SoFi. Seattle does have the better record going into this game, but Niners own the head-to-head. I do like the Niners as the 2.5-point dog with that in that 7 p.m. special with Buck and Aikman. Ryan, you like that?
I'd take that money.
You like the Bucks? I'm sorry, the Niners. Niners is a 2.5-point dog. I like that for Shanahan and the troops, CMC. Tomorrow, it gets even better with our Texans hosting the Colts. where Houston is a 10-point favorite, and rightfully so. This could be the lock of the week right here. Texans defense should have no problem absolutely destroying Riley Leonard and that Colts offense that has been absolutely non-existent since they lost Daniel Jones. And number two, the Texans can still win the AFC South. They still have a ton to play for as our eyes will be peeled on Titans-Jaguars on Fox, a game in which the Jaguars should have really no issue with as well. But our eyes will be locked there because if the Jags lose and the Texans win, Houston clinches the AFC South. And I think would host a that they would host a home wildcard game, I believe, instead of having to go to Pittsburgh or Baltimore. Is there any other scenarios there that we know of? No, it would only be Pittsburgh or Baltimore? Okay.
There's still potential for us to get the 6 or the 7 seed, so we could be going to either Jacksonville or New England
okay.
or Denver, whoever gets the one.
I don't mind going to Pittsburgh this year. Don't mind going to Baltimore. I do not want to go to New England. This is an organization that has literally never won a playoff game on the road. The Texans are 0-8 on the road all time in the playoffs. So, a Jags loss tomorrow would absolutely warrant a celebration. I think this version of the Texans can absolutely beat the Steelers and Ravens on the road. Drake May, Vrabel, and the Patriots, I just want no piece of, Ryan. Want no piece of. Now, shifting over to the world of golf, we'll get to some more NFL later. We're still 2 weeks away from the start of the 2026 PGA Tour season. The season will start at the Sony Open, being that week one at the Century was canceled due to a 2-month drought there in West Maui that really stunted the course preparations for that tournament. The Plantation course at Kapalua did reopen for public play at the beginning of November, but no tournament is happening. My take there is, I mean, listen, I'm getting cabin fever here. Usually the season would have started by now. I'd be previewing the Century. That course is always a great way to get the season started. I do wish that the PGA Tour and the government of Hawaii could have gotten a plan situated to relocate the Century. I just don't know if they had enough time, being that the drought. It all happened in September and October, and they couldn't reopen until the beginning of November. So I think their hands were tied there, but I am simply fired up for the Sony Open at Wiley 2 weeks out. We'll get to more on that. We'll get to more on TGL a little bit later on. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor here on ESPN Houston. Back after this.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 in HD, 97.9 HD2. Is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
Okay, TGL has kicked off for season two. Atlanta Golf Club, led by Billy Horschel, Corey Connors, and Chris Goddard, took down Xander Schauffele's New York Golf Club. That was towards the middle of the week. And then last night, Rory's Boston Common, who added Michael Thorby Jorgensen this offseason, and he looked phenomenal last night. This is a younger talent out of Stanford who just seems to understand the next generation of golf fans. I think Rory adding Michael to that team was absolutely genius. And Rory and Keegan Bradley, Thorby Jorgensen, beat Los Angeles Golf Club, which features Justin Rose, Sahith Theegala, and Colin Morikawa. Listen, I did not keep a ton of tabs on the Indoor Golf League's inaugural season. I will say that TGL is doing a lot of positives for the game, being that It is on primetime ESPN during the week. That's a big spot for the world of golf. And these franchises are starting to add some younger players to the mix. We saw Atlanta add Scottish Open champion Chris Goddard, and Boston has added Thorby Bjornsson. This is a league that golf is hoping brings in a new golf audience, being that the name is Tomorrow Golf League. They're thinking this is the future, not to replace, you know, a 72-hole competition, but just something where golf can be at the forefront on ESPN during the week. And I think through a year and a couple matches, I think there's still a lot of work to do. You know, the graphics for the simulator, I don't know if that is really a TV product. And I'm going all based off ratings. I don't think there's been a TGL match that has eclipsed a million live viewers. And yet you can tell me about the YouTube replay and the streaming numbers and the TikTok. I'm really not interested in the scroll ratings. I'm really only interested in the Nielsen TV rating, which only registers a view if someone has been watching for a full minute. That is what I'm interested in. And TGL has really not made a mark on those ratings. Now, you do have a major problem this year in the fact that Tiger Woods is fresh off another back surgery, and he likely won't play for Jupiter Golf Club for the entire season. That is a problem because this is a league that was created to keep Tiger relevant as far as him actually playing golf for an audience. And right now, Tiger can barely walk, and he's barely been able to walk for the last couple of years. So they created this sim golf league that they thought was Tiger injury proof, being that all you have to do is hit into a screen and then walk 15 yards to chip and putt. And it is injury proof in theory. I mean, it's in a dome. You don't have to deal with weather. You know, Tiger can't play in cold weather because his back tightens up, left knee tightens up. TGL is injury proof in theory, but not for a Tiger Woods coming off his seventh back surgery. You still have to swing the club, and he cannot do so. What I would like to see in the meantime is Tiger at the TGL events every week on the broadcast. He can either be there in person, or you can set it up like the Manning cast, where Tiger is on his couch commentating on the coverage. As aforementioned, TGL has not made a dent in the ratings yet. You know, golf in a hole has not made a dent in the ratings yet. We saw the top 100 TV events of 2025. You know, football, basketball, baseball all had events in the top 100 of the ratings in 2025. Golf did not, even with Rory McIlroy completing the Grand Slam at Augusta. Golf did not have a top 100 ratings product for 2025. Giving Tiger Woods his own feed for the TGL matches where he can work through some guests and commentate on the action, I think this is something golf needs to do for not only TGL, but also for the majors when Tiger isn't playing. Now, when I suggest this to my buddies, they feel like Tiger will never commentate and that he doesn't have the personality for it. But people forget that Earl Woods famously predicted that his son would do way more beyond the world of golf. And now that Tiger is past his prime as far as playing, I do predict that he will eventually get in front of a mic. And I think it's going to be biblical. Casey in San Antonio. Will, I saw there was a patent filed for a Texas golf club regarding TGL. Any update there? That is true. It would be a team that would hopefully feature the likes of Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth. That would go a long way, with Spieth being one of the true needle movers of the game who would just thrive in a mic'd up environment that TGL brings. So, you know, that's kind of the update there on TGL. big season two ahead. The next match, week two, is going to be January 6th here in 3 days. It's going to be the Bay Golf Club featuring Ludwig Oberg going up against Atlanta Drive Golf Club. Once again, led by the great Chris Goddard. Let's get to the phone lines. Tanner in Trinity, you're on the Golf Hour on ESPN Houston. Tanner, good morning. Bring it.
Good morning, Will. So I'm going to piggyback off your TGL stance. I'll be honest, it's not really my cup of tea. I don't even really like hitting balls into a screen to begin with. So
completely
I don't really
understand,
care to watch
Tanner.
It.
I completely understand your take there.
I can't see the league surviving if Tiger Woods isn't involved. I disagree with your buddies 100%. I think he would be phenomenal on the microphone. I've never got the vibes that he's not outgoing when he's speaking on a mic. I think he'd be great. However, I still think you've got to have him swinging a golf club. I think they need to figure something out with that, because that's the only reason I was interested to begin with at first. If I'm going to spend 2 hours of my night watching guys hit into a screen, I want it to be the greatest of all time. And the appeal behind that was, we never get to watch this guy anymore. He can't play in majors, and obvious reasons, but this was our one chance to still watch kind of our childhood hero swing the club. And now that that's kind of taken away, I just can't imagine there being viewer after viewer and people keeping up with the full season and buying shirts for their team. I don't see the vision, and I think it might fizzle out.
Tanner, I completely agree with you 100%. Besides Rory, who's only going to play every 2-3 weeks in TGL, you don't have any needle movers there. And back to the point on Tiger, you know, if TGL doesn't work, I almost feel like Tiger should be hosting a kind of a one-hour show on ESPN every week, where he brings in players. Maybe they're hitting some shots in the simulator, but even in this situation, if Tiger's hurt, everyone's still going to be tuning in to a one-hour conversation that Tiger Woods is going to have on the world of golf. This guy transcended the game. And when you look at the ratings, you know, the highest rated golf product ever was the 2005 Masters, which got 13.9 million views. And I think, you know, we've come to accept golf as a sport that, you know, it's not going to break all the ratings records, and we shouldn't spend too much time talking about ratings. But if there's one guy who's bringing in the millions, it is Tiger Woods. We need to see him on that broadcast every week. Great stuff, Tanner. What else you got for us today?
So I was looking, obviously always looking at some props.
Yep.
Scottie Scheffler to win one major, -125. I'm almost sick to say I love that, and I raise you the point. What happened to the time 4 years ago where the best odds you would get on a guy to win a major is +650, +700? Like, I think I'm fully just realizing how unbelievable it is what Scottie Scheffler is doing, for the odds to be -125 to win one major, and me think that might be a lock.
Well, Tanner, you've caddied at very high levels. You've seen some of the best go at it right in front of you. It is simply, you know, when you look at Scotty, he is 6'4", hits the ball a country mile, plus he has the best short game in the world. And since he's added Phil Kenyon to the team and got the putting sorted out over the last year, he has been simply unstoppable. You know, the fact that Shinnecock sets up so well for him at the U.S. Open in a tournament where he could potentially complete the Grand Slam, you know, it's going to be what a year it's going to be for world number one Scottie Scheffler. Once again, 19 wins at just 29 years of age. Now, it really is. It really is. Now, you brought up Scheffler to win one major at -120. I don't see how that, you know, when we talk about futures, it's always, and you know this, Tanner, it's, you know, I was talking about Justin Rose to win the Masters at 70-1 last week. What we're trying to figure out is by the time we get to Masters week, are we going to have a worse or better number on that? And
exactly. And that's,
go ahead.
I'm worried it'll be like plus 200 or plus 250, because I'm always very, very, very cautious about these, because last thing I want is take Scheffler minus 125 and say U.S. Open comes around and he's plus 600 and that's the one he hits on. You'd much rather have that, but boy, what is it going to be come Masters time if he comes out guns a-blazing like we all know he can?
And Tanner, go back to last year when Scheffler had the Christmas Day incident, and everyone, you know, we all thought, he's going to be slowed down to start 2025. It's going to take him some time. It took him about a month to get warmed back up before rattling off six victories. I think if there was going to be any bump in the road, it would have been last year after that 2-3 month layoff after the Christmas Day accident. I don't think anything's stopping Scheffler, and I think you're spot on in the sense that I'm not sure you're going to get a better number than minus 120 to win one major by the time Augusta comes around in April.
100%. 100%. And one more I'll run by you. If you have time,
go
for it.
Go for it, Tanner.
Joaquin Niemann over 1.5 wins on LIV plus 150. Look, I know the games didn't finish the season in a great spot, and the last 2 years, yes, he hasn't finished number one. But if you've kept up with LIV events, like you could, even though the point system and the money system, like he pretty much finished first both 2 years, in my opinion, with how dominant he was and how many wins he had. I get his game's in a rough spot, but every single year he wins at least two live events. I think I'm gonna ride with that one on that at plus 150.
Tanner, absolutely great take there. I think people are falling victim to the recent moment with Niemann, being that he did struggle a lot at the BMW PGA and Australian Open, two missed cuts in a row. I am not going to forget about the big picture of Joaquin Niemann when it comes to 2025. I thought he made great progress in the majors, finishing tied for eighth at the PGA Championship. You remember the narrative for Niemann coming into this season. Where are the majors? Where's the major results? Give this kid some time. Only 27. And he had how many he had four wins on LIV this year. You have Niemann at plus 150 over one win?
1.5.
1.5, so it'd be two victories to cash. You know, throw the key away, Tanner. I absolutely love it.
I do too. And I think I always have a soft spot for Joaquin Niemann, because if he was on the PGA Tour, I truly think everybody would be rooting for him and look at it different. As man, he seems like a great dude. He's a great golfer. And his major finishes haven't been great, but I think they blow those way out of proportion. He has not played horrible in every major like the Twitter bots make it sound. He's put himself in some decent spots. I 100% believe within the next 3-4 years, Joaquin Niemann will win a major.
One absolutely spectacular call, Tanner. Joaquin Niemann, the flusher of our generation. I'm absolutely fired up to see his progress in 2026. And yeah, as you said, 2025 was a massive year for him, specifically at Quail Hollow. And once again, as Tanner said, the major results have not been terrible for Niemann. Tied 29th in majors, you know, is not some terrible result. Sure, it's not contending on Sunday, but it takes some time for most elite players to figure out how to play these majors. And Niemann, on top of the four LIV golf wins, major progress in the way that he's playing majors in 2025. Thanks for the call, Tanner. We got to take a quick break. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor. Back after this.
Mike Booker, chairman of the Texas Golf Hall of Fame and holder of a record number of Texas Golf Association championships.
The Texas Golf Hall of Fame is the foundation of golf in our great state. So many great individuals, Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, Kathy Whitworth, Ben Crenshaw, and many others, lead the way in making golf in Texas known around the world. Now you can experience the history of Texas golf digitally at texasgolf.com. HOF.org, and share with your family and friends. See you on the course.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Listening to the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
All right, welcome back to the show. 713-780-3776 to get your questions in. As far as any questions on the, you know, the 2026 season, majors, Bet Online now has the 2026 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year Award odds up. Marco Ping leads the way at 5-1 on the odds boards there. Friend of the show, Johnny Kiefer's second at +650. Marco Ping is coming from the DP World Tour as well, but a couple other DP guys, Rasmus Nygaard-Peterson and Christopher Wrighton, are 3-4 on the odds boards as far as Rookie of the Year predictions at +750 and +850. So maybe we'll get to some of that a little bit later on. I do want to mention, you know, earlier this week, I'm sure you saw the news. There was a fire at a bar in the Swiss resort of Crans, Montana. And this was a fire. It was New Year's Day. It killed 40 people and injured another 119. And it was a three-story club that was accidentally set ablaze by sparklers on champagne bottles with the Swiss president calling it one of the worst tragedies in the country's history. Terrible, terrible New Year's accident. And I had to bring this up because in the fire, the world of golf lost 16-year-old Italian phenom Emmanuel Galopini. Emmanuel Galopini lost in this New Year's Day accident in Crans, Montana, Switzerland. The Italian Golf Federation put out a tribute statement that did not mention the fire, but his dad later confirmed that his son was in the bar that night. And I'm absolutely devastated. I mean, this was a 17-year-old, who really had an authentic Italian swagger about him, played the game with great passion, and had already been recruited to train full-time in Dubai where he was living. And, you know, he signed to a major sports agency last summer, was starting to rack in the NIL deals, and was by all means likely to sign with a good Division I program here over the next year, if he wasn't setting his sights for the pro game straight out of high school. This is a devastating loss for the world of golf. Horrible tragedy. I'm having my team reach out to the Italian Golf Federation, see if we can potentially get someone on the show to formally remember Galopini, as so many of the golf media elite are forgetting to do. Your call, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the Italian Federation, it is a Spirit year. In November of 2026, the Spirit International Amateur Golf Championship will celebrate its 25th anniversary, hosting 80 men and women from the 20 best countries in the world at Whispering Pines Golf Club in Trinity, Texas. It is, as always, an Olympic-style competition, and sponsorship opportunities are now available to put yourself or your company alongside the best up-and-coming talent in the world of golf, with all proceeds going to Baylor College of Medicine, Teen Clinic, and Medical Bridges. This is a tournament that has seen the likes of Scottie Scheffler and Rose Zhang, Jordan Spieth, Paula Kramer. This is the best amateur golf tournament in the world, just an hour and a half north of Houston. Visit spiritgolf.com to get involved or contact me. Chris in Dallas. Will, I read Roy McIlroy is open to inviting live golfers back to the PGA Tour without penalty. Hasn't Rory changed his tone there? Listen, Rory changes his tone on subjects every 2 weeks. Loves to talk, loves to give the media some juice. I'm a little over trying to create these hypothetical penalties for live golf guys, being that their tour has had zero success other than creating a small global footprint. And I can already tell you that with Brooks Koepka leaving LIV Golf, the penalties, you know, if the PGA Tour were to enforce penalties, there's just no way that the penalty would be the same for everybody. They're not going to give the same penalty to Brooks Koepka as they are for Hudson Swafford. And that all is going to get way too complicated. I think whenever the LIV Golf Tour folds, you give those guys a year of suspension and then you bring them back. You know, for Rory to say, you know, they all just come back whenever they want, I'm not sure if there was really enough context behind that quote. I think all of them should face a year-long suspension and then come back without any fines. I think that is the only way to do it, where all the players get the same penalty. We go to Tim. We go to Timmy time on the line. Tim, what's going on? Good morning, my friend. Tim, you're on ESPN Houston. Fire away. Hey, you know, not much. Having a good morning here. You know, a little bit of some down energy with the golfer losing Emmanuel Galopini in the Swiss Fire. That was horrible news, but we've gotten some good stuff done here as far as college football, the NFL, a little bit of TGL. And, hey, congratulations on your Ole Miss Rebels getting to the semifinals. What a win there for salt and pepper Pete Golding, Timmy time.
What a first win to get your as a college football head coach. And it
second
makes
win.
Me so happy that second win, that Lane Kiffin was not given the honor by the media scrum to hop on and be in the media booth with Herb Street Fowler during the game to take the spotlight off his Ole Miss team. It's not his team. It's the Ole Miss Rebels. Those players on the team are the team, not Lane Kiffin. And shout out to ESPN and whoever was involved in the decision-making to not allow Kiffin to get in and make the game all about himself.
Well, Tim, he did get on social and post a pic that his kids were there watching it. So, you know, and his one statement about the game, he did make it a bit about his own family. But, hey, listen, congratulations to your Rebels. You liked them. You liked them in the next game, Tim. You liked them to go ahead and advance to a final. You know, what are your thoughts there?
One of the biggest things about the playoffs for college football was that they were like, well, unlike college basketball with March Madness, there's going to be no Cinderella team. And I think we have ourselves our first Cinderella team. If Kiffin was there, it wouldn't be the case. But with a brand new head coach and with news from Yahoo Sports saying that All six of staff members that Kiffin let coach in the Sugar Bowl versus Georgia, he might not allow coach the rest of the playoffs. So that is a huge thing to keep an eye on. And that will give Pete Golding at Ole Miss not only the job of trying to prepare his team for the game, but also try to put an offensive coaching staff together if Charlie Weiss and company head to Baton Rouge and won't coach the Rebels for the rest of the playoffs.
It is such a gritty story, Tim. I'm just not sure, you know, this Miami team, I mean, they just embarrassed two teams here at home in Texas A&M and Texas Tech. You know, Ole Miss, you know, opens the Fiesta Bowl as a 3.5-point dog. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. My apologies. Thank you, Ryan Marr, on the ones and twos. Miami beat Ohio State. My apologies. You like your Rebels there as a 3.5-point dog there, Timmy time?
I do. I think we have the Cinderella team that people said wouldn't happen in college football. I think we have it this year. And I think they'll beat Miami to go play in Miami for the national championship. And in my opinion, it's going to be versus Indiana. So should be two good college football playoff games coming up to watch.
Yeah, my apologies there just a second ago. As far as the Thursday, January 1st quarterfinal games, Indiana beat Alabama, Ole Miss beat Georgia, and Oregon beat Texas Tech. Tim, give me some stuff on the world of golf. What do you got for me?
Well, we got the 2026 season upcoming here very soon. And for the PGA, we have some fresh faces that a lot of PGA fans probably aren't familiar with and probably have never heard of, quite frankly. And those are two guys that punched their cards to the PGA Tour after having two fabulous seasons on the DP World Tour. You got Marco Pinch, three-time winner this past season from England. He had four top tens along with those three wins. He won at Open de España, the Danish, and the Hanan Classic. And then my second favorite guy coming across the pond to play on tour this year is the Norwegian Christopher Reiten. I'm very super impressed with Reiten. He's a dog. He's got a tough mental game, and he has a great putter, which is needed on the PGA Tour. He has two wins this year at Sedal and the Ned Bank just recently. Seven top tens to go along with it. What's impressive about Reiten is how he finished and won that Sedal Open. He shot a 10 under 62 on Sunday to force a playoff, and then he won the playoff. That is the type of mental toughness that it's going to take to get it done. And following that, the very next event, he shoots 60 to force a playoff and come up just short. So Reiten has shown this year he has what it takes to get it done in the big moment.
Tim, I like the take on Marco Ping. I think he has a complete game that should translate extremely well in the PGA Tour, and Marco is currently the 5-1 favorite to win 2026 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. I'm a little skeptical of the chipping motion of one Christopher Reiten. He chips cross-handed. He had a lot of trouble with it all year. And as you know, that is one of the, when you talk to caddies, when you talk to coaches, one of the biggest hurdles when advancing to the PGA Tour is keeping up around the greens. You have to hope that Reiten is getting with his coaches there in Norway and making some improvement on the chipping, because that is going to be the X factor. That is going to be the X factor of Christopher Reiten either staying on the PGA Tour after 2026 or going back to the DP World Tour. Great call there, Timmy. We've got to take a quick break. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor on ESPN Houston. Back for one more.
Mike Booker, chairman of the Texas Golf Hall of Fame and holder of a record number of Texas Golf Association championships.
The Texas Golf Hall of Fame is the foundation of golf in our great state. So many great individuals, Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, Kathy Whitworth, Ben Crenshaw, Babe Zaharias, Tom Kite, and many more lead the way in making golf in Texas known around the world. Learn about the historic golf courses and the individuals that promoted the game through leadership, teaching, and passion. Texas and golf go hand in hand in the history of the game and camaraderie. Together we can honor the past, celebrate the present, and inspire future generations of Texas golfers. Golf is a sport for everyone, and I encourage you to experience the history of Texas golf digitally at TexasGolfHOF.org and share with your golf family and friends. That's TexasGolfHOF.org. See you on the course.
ESPN 97.5.
The Golf Hour continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
All right, we heard back in November, and I missed this. I knew it was going on, but I haven't broken it down yet. We heard back in November that Herman Park Golf Course is going to undergo a $30 million renovation led by Jim Crane and golf course architect John Schmenk. You know, it's due time for Herman Park. I mean, it's a 103-year-old property. It is a phenomenal municipal layout that really has just not been, you know, it hasn't been kept up with over the last 10 years. You know, the conditions, you know, have not been great. It is still a nice round of golf, but it has not kept up with Memorial Park by any means. And now Herman Park is kind of, they're reimagining how Herman Park is going to fit into the Houston golf community. They want to better accommodate more golfers. They want to adapt to the more fast round of golf. So the plan right now, as far as I'm concerned, is that they're going to turn the front nine into a sort of a par three course, and then lengthen the back nine. And I don't know, I don't really know what lengthen means as far as, are they going to lengthen the holes, or are they going to add more to the back nine and make it? Are they going to add another nine to the back nine and make it 18 holes? You know, these are the things we're going to have to find out. My guess would be that they're going to make the front nine a par three course. They'll leave the back nine and just adjust the yardages. And I think it's a great plan. Once again, Herman Park, it's just been beat up for the last 10 years. They're just south of downtown, and it's a great location for people from the medical center, from downtown, to get over and just play a quick nine, especially if they're going to make it a par three course. I'm sure they have seen the success of East River Nine. I would think every public golf course is seeing what East River Nine is doing right now. A nice par three course. It's lit up at night. You can go out with the buddies and not worry about losing golf balls. And, you know, you have a couple beers while you're playing nine holes. They got the pickleball courts too, which is a completely separate issue that I'm not going to get into this morning. But I think Herman Park should really look at what East River is doing and kind of replicate their par three course around that. And I'm excited to see the future of it. I look forward to seeing when this construction is going to start. I think there's reports that it began in September. I think it is a bit delayed based on a release I read, but we'll keep in touch with that. It's a $30 million restoration. I'm fired up for it. You know, another place inside the loop that you can get over and play a quick nine. I'm all about it. Sam in Central Indiana. Will, have you added anything as far as the 2026 majors? You know, I've really been deep diving on Justin Rose. I told you last week that I did like Justin Rose at the Masters at 70-1, being that he's coming off a season where not only did he lose in a playoff at Augusta, but he kept the pedal to the metal, ended up getting his 11th PGA Tour win at the FedEx St. Jude. I like where his game is. He is on a TGL team that is keeping his game sharp over the offseason, even though LAGC got beat last night by Boston. It's interesting. Justin Rose, since we talked about him, he was 70-1 last week to win the Masters. His number has now dropped to 60-1. Now, as I started to review Rose this week and I started to review the 2026 major setups, it became apparent to me that the best setup for Rose is actually Royal Birkdale for the Open Championship. And his number's 50-1 there. And I was hoping when I got on Bet Online that I would see, you know, maybe 70, 75-1. But I actually think Birkdale is where Rose is a little more dangerous. You have to think, the one thing that scares me with Rose at Augusta is he had his golden opportunity last year, and he's already lost in two playoffs. Maybe the time has come and gone for Rose as far as a green jacket is concerned. We'll talk more about the 2026 major futures over the next week, get you some more picks there. Enjoyed the show this morning. Thank you, Ryan Morrow, and the ones and twos. Absolutely phenomenal production. We'll talk next Saturday here on the Golf Hour with Will Doctor on ESPN Houston.
ESPN 97.5.